Saturday, February 12th, was the big day. We've come to speak of it as the party, and nobody doubts what we mean. It's the Lindo's party for Lucy, centered around Valentine's Day, given by Helene, Lucy's best friend through NCS days. Bill Hitchcock, her brother, and Ann Pittman are up from Austin, and Susan and Jim Ray from Hale Center, and Mr. and Mrs. Nugent are driving from Waukegan to spend the weekend with us. It will be our first meeting. They're here for the party and then on to Florida. Such was the setting of a day of joyous reunion, somewhat uneasy, awkward first meeting approached with simple goodwill and gala anticipation. But the regular business of the day went forward. In the morning, I met with Mrs. Provenson in the Queen's room for about 2 hours of work on my speech for the Road Builders Association in Denver. But it was interrupted by a question, would I go to the Lincoln Memorial with Lyndon to lay a wreath? It was Lincoln's birthday. Of course I would. On about 5 minutes' notice, I was off with him. How good to get a few minutes in the car alone. There was a brief and impressive ceremony at the Lincoln Memorial. John Sparkman read the Gettysburg Address. Lyndon placed a wreath and stood for a very long moment with his head bowed in front of Lincoln's statue. I hope I have the grace to understand the weight of all the conflicting strains of thought and hope that went through his mind. And then the 5 other wreaths were laid. One by Sevilla Sacasa, the Dean of the Diplomatic Corps. One by the Mexican delegation, Ambassador Margan, the only other nation represented. I spotted the Tellos and we went over to speak a moment. And then we were off to the White House. In the meantime, Lucy had met the Nugents out at Howard Johnson's in Chevy Chase and escorted them back to the White House. And they were up in the solarium, the tower of my little princess. We joined Lennon for lunch, 8 of us, including the Rays. And the light, the laughter, the ease, the good mixing of the lunch was Lyndon. Well, Miss Nugent, Pat's been a pretty good boy. Gets in before daylight every morning. And then I had a long, delicious nap. Signed mail, worked at my desk. And then it was time to get ready for the party. I wore my yellow chiffon. Jean-Louis put my hair up in what I hoped was a queenly array on top of my head. And I took Mr. and Mrs. Nugent to the City Tavern in Georgetown. For once in my life, with Lucy ahead of me at no urging. So thrilled, so appreciative, wanting to prove her responsibility by arriving as a hostess requested at 8:15. Mrs. Nugent is an amputee. It is very hard for her to get in and out of cars. She said she'd like to sit in front with a chauffeur. It was easier. I flinched from the press reaction this trivial bit would cause and said, oh no, I believe you'll be real comfortable on the back seat next to the window. She looked very pretty in a turquoise dress, her manner easy, warm, and Mr. Nugent is very young-looking, quite like Pat, a nice mixture of dignified respect and easy friendliness. It was drizzling rain, but as we drove up to the City Tavern, there was enough press and cameras to cover a great opening night. The stars had already gone in, Lucy and Pat, but I lived up to it with the best smile I could as the 3 of us hurried in out of the rain. What an amazing, delightful mixture of party it was. Mrs. Lindo, who looked beautiful and elegant in a white beaded dress and an elaborate hairdo, had wanted Lucy to make up the list. And Lucy, as only she could, had included friends from 18 to 70. How extraordinarily generous it was of the Lindos to want it that way. There was Lissy Grant from her NCS days, Ann Pittman, the only one of her Austin friends who'd been able to afford it, and from her years of romance with the Page School, Bob Barkus, Don Anderson, and Hitch, all qualifying as brothers. 2 of the most decorative couples in town, Ed and Barbara Howard, and Nancy and Dick Dickerson, whom Lucy considers her own special friends. At least one couple from the campaign trail, the William Feldsteins. Her skiing friends, David and Cecily Corcoran. Anne Hand, she used to sit for the 5 little hand. Lloyd was somewhere around the world with the vice president. Midshipman Leroy Bates, from her brief encounter with the Academy. My own good friends, the Hale Bob, who have that southern habit of including one's children in their own circle of friends, and a very generous contingent from our staff, the Ables and the Carpenters, Patsy and Marie and Vicky, And of course, Ashton and her husband, often Lucy's chaperones and always her favorites, the Bill Moyers, the Marvin Watsons. They don't go out much, and I was delighted to see them having fun. Lucy's old boss, Dr. Kraskin, who said ruefully, "You may have gained a son-in-law, but I've lost a mighty good employee." I was delighted that Lucy put on the Philip Nichols. She's worked with Lyndon since 1939. So with Juanita, Mildred Stegall, and of course, Willie Day Taylor, who's tended to Lucy all of her little life, it was sort of old home week. Delicious and cozy and full of You Remember Whens. Nobody had more fun than Dr. Travail, who really loves Lucy. I saw her dancing the frug, some young White House aide, and I think Pearl Mester, who looked quite regal, in a marvelous gown and jewels. Never missed a dance either. I must say the full dress uniforms of the five or six White House aides that Lucy had asked lent color and glamour to the party and to the dancing. Diana and Donald were there, and the Dale Millers, and two of the other very decorative couples around town, the young Tazewell Shepherds, and Woody and Mary Ellen Woodward. Woody used to help me warm Lucy's bottle while I put on the coffee pot for his breakfast when he first came to work for us and stayed with us at 30th Place in 1948, and has been doing things for her ever since. And Homer Thornberry represented his family and sat on my right. For so many years on 30th Place, three Thornberry children were Lucy's constant companions and best friends. The dinner menu was painted on a tray. Trompe d'oeil, I believe, would be the name. It was consommé true love, capon Virginia a la Lucy, wild rice Patrick, asparagus Waukegan, Pardinalis salad, and cherries flambé and pettifour in the shape of valentines. It was delicious, but the dancing was so good, Sidney played. When I was half through a course, I would start out on the floor with somebody and dance so long that I would get back to find that course disappeared. At one end of the ballroom, Mrs. Lindo had a small garden made up of flowering shrubs and plants, and in the center of it, what should there be but our two doves from the White House in their pagoda-shaped birdcage, emitting their quiet little coos. Our host made a very nice toast when the champagne followed the dessert, and then there began a round of toasts by the young people, of great variety and charm. Stafford Hutchinson's was very amusing. He's a born actor. He lauded the institution of matrimony. No family should be without it. Bill Hitchcock's was sweet and very natural and youthfully earnest. And then came Joe Ness, a very handsome young man, one of Pat's friends. There were six or eight of his friends who had driven down from Waukegan and from Marquette. It was smooth and very well done. And I was so glad to hear from the other side of the house. I didn't want it to be only Lucy's party. Stevie Steinertz, he's another one of Lucy's page friends, was predictably sentimental. And then came the surprise of the evening. Anne Hand, who, when she married Lloyd at the age of 18, was studying for opera, sang her toast, "Love is a many splendored thing." She and the song were beautiful. Homer and I had been muttering to each other about, "Wonder if Lyndon's coming. Do you think one of us had better go and phone?" I did so want him to come, but not to pressure him. And about that time, Hale Boggs took his glass in hand and said, "I propose a toast to the President of the United States." At that precise moment, while a ripple went through the gathering, almost like a ruffle of drums, in strode Lyndon from the back door. Perfect timing, but I found later, completely unplanned. Mrs. Lindo, thoughtful of every detail, had had a chair waiting in case he did come, which he drew up beside her, and he was just in time to hear Lucy's own answering toast. We couldn't have asked for more. I was very proud. Modest, sincere, grateful, charmingly natural. And then we all danced some more, Lyndon with Mrs. Lindo, and with Lucy and me. Mr. Nugent, it turned out, was a good dancer and on the floor every minute. Nobody explained or mentioned why Mrs. Nugent did not dance. Some of us, of course, knew, and I murmured it to a few, and I was pleased to see Pearl Mester coming over and chatting with her, as several of the guests did, indeed, when the table began to empty with dancing. There had been one other delightful little toast that added a Philip, David Corcoran, a poem he'd composed while sitting at the table about their skiing trip, gently amusing, calling Lucy his little snow bunny. It was a perfect, delicious, wonderful party, and I was reluctant to go. At about 12:20, I accompanied Lyndon and Homer home, leaving the party to go on for another hour and a half and all reports afterward, that it was most genuinely happy mixing of the most diverse crowd, all drawn there by one reason. We love Lucy. Lyndon and I read the Sunday papers until a little after 2 o'clock. Lucy came in her Princess Margaret dress, looking indeed like a little princess, and still floating on air. The day is over, and it has been perfect.